wandered over as he finished. The top of the piano was covered with framed photographs. One was a summer scene, taken somewhere along the river. Two pretty girls in matching bikinis standing on either side of an intense young man. The girls were dappled with moisture, laughing for the photographer. Long black hair hanging wetly down across wide smiles. The man, or boy, or whatever he was in a swimsuit, but you could tell he was bone dry. He was gaunt and sallow, and his blue eyes stared into the lens with a vacancy that was oddly disturbing. The girls could have been as young as 18 or as old as 20. One of them was the woman Rogoff was questioning. But Randy could not have told you which one. Twins. She glanced at the other photos, half afraid she'd find a picture of Willie. Most of the faces she didn't recognize, but she was still looking them over when Rogoff came up behind her. "Coroner's upstairs with the body," he said. "You can come up if you've got the stomach." Randy turned away from the piano and nodded. "You learn anything from the sister?" "She had a nightmare," he said. He started up the narrow staircase, Randy close behind him. "She says that as far back as she can remember, whenever she had bad dreams, she'd just cross the hall and crawl into bed with Zoe." They reached the landing. Rogoff put his hand on the glass doorknob, then paused. "What she found when she crossed this hall this time is going to keep her in nightmares for years to come." He opened the door. Randy followed him inside. The only light was a small bedside lamp, but the police photographer was moving around the room, snapping pictures of the red twisted thing on the bed. The light of his flash made the shadows leap and writhe, and Randy's stomach writhed with them. The smell of blood was overwhelming. She remembered summers long ago, hot July days, when the wind blew from the south and the stink of the slaughterhouse settled over the city. But this was 1,000 times worse. The photographer was moving, flashing, moving, flashing. The world went from grey to red and then back to grey again. The coroner was bent over the corpse, her motions turned jerky and unreal by the strobing of the big flash gun. The white light blazed off the ceiling, and Randy looked up and saw the mirrors there. The dead woman's mouth gaped open, round and wide, in a silent scream. He'd cut off her lips with her skin, and the inside of her mouth was no redder than the outside. Her face was gone, nothing left but the glistening wet ropes of muscle, and here and there the pale glint of bone. But he'd left her large eyes. Large, dark eyes, pretty eyes, sensuous, like her sister's downstairs. They were wide open, staring up in terror at the mirror on the ceiling. She'd been able to see every detail of what was being done to her. What had she found in the eyes of her reflection? Pain, terror, despair? A twin all of her life, perhaps she'd found some strange comfort in her mirror image, even as her face and her flesh and her humanity had been cut away from her. The flash went off again, and Randy caught the glint of metal at the wrist and ankle. She closed her eyes for a second, steadied her breathing, and moved to the foot of the bed where Rogoff was talking to the coroner. "Some kind of chains?" he asked. "You got it, and look at this." Coroner Cooney took the unlit cigar out of her mouth and pointed. The chain looped tightly round the victim's ankle. When the flash went off again, Randy saw the other circles, dark black lines scored across the raw flesh and exposed nerves. It made her hurt just to look. "She struggled," Rogoff suggested. "The chain chafed against her flesh." "Chafing leaves you raw and bloody," Cooney said. "What was done to her, you'd never notice chafing. That's a burn, Rogoff, a third-degree burn. Both wrists, both ankles. Wherever the metal touched her. Sorensen had the same burn marks, like the killer heated the chains until they were white hot. Only the metal is cold now. Go on, touch it." No thanks, Rogoff said. I'll take your word for it. Wait a minute, Randy said. The coroner seemed to notice her for the first time. What's she doing here? She asked. It's a long story, Rogoff replied. Randy, this is official police business. You'd better keep... Randy ignored him. Joan Sorensen had the same kind of burn marks, she asked Cooney. At wrist and ankle, where the chains touched her skin? That's right, Cooney said. So what? What are you trying to say? Rogoff asked her. She looked at him. Joan Sorensen was a cripple. She had no use of her legs, no sensation at all below the waist. So why bother to chain her ankles? Rogoff stared at her for a long moment, then shook his head. He looked over to Cooney. The coroner shrugged. Yeah, so? An interesting point. But what does it mean? She had no answer for them. She looked away, back at the bed, at the skinned, twisted, mutilated thing that had once been a pretty woman. The photographer moved to a different angle, pressed his shutter. The flash went off again. The chain glittered in the light. Softly, Randy brushed a fingertip across the metal. She felt no heat, only the cold, pale touch of silver. The night was full of sounds and smells. Willie had run wildly, blindly, a grey shadow streaking down black rain-slick streets, pushing himself harder and faster than he'd ever pushed before. Paying no attention to where he went, anywhere, nowhere, everywhere, just so it was far away from his apartment and the thing that waited there with death shining bright in its hand. He darted along grimy alleys, under loading docks, bounded over low chain-link fences. There was a cylinder block wall somewhere that almost stopped him. Three leaps and he failed to clear it, but on the fourth try he got his front paws over the top and his back legs kicked and scrabbled and pushed him over. He fell onto damp grass, rolled in the dirt, and then he was up and running again. The streets were almost empty of traffic, but as he streaked across one wide boulevard, a pickup truck appeared out of nowhere, speeding, and caught him in its lights. The sudden glare startled him. He froze for a long instant in the centre of the street and saw shock and terror on the driver's face. A horn blared as the pickup began to brake, went into a skid, and fishtailed across the divider. By then, Willie was gone. He was moving through a residential section now, down quiet streets lined by neat two-story houses. Parked cars filled the narrow driveways, realtor's signs flapped in the wind, but the only lights were the street lamps. And sometimes, when the clouds parted for a second, the pale circle of the moon. He caught the scent of dogs from some of the backyards, and from time to time he heard a wild, frenzied barking, and he knew that they'd smelled him too. Sometimes the barking woke owners and neighbours, and then lights would come on in the silent houses, and doors would open in the backyards. But by then, Willie would be blocks away, still running. Finally, when his legs were aching, and his heart was thundering, and his tongue lolled redly from his mouth, Willie crossed the railroad tracks, climbed a steep embankment, and came hard up against a 10-foot chain-link fence with barbed wire strung along the top. Beyond the fence was a wide, empty yard and a low brick building, windowless and vast, dark beneath the light of the moon. The smell of old blood was faint but unmistakable, and abruptly Willie knew where he was. The old slaughterhouse. The Pack, they'd called it, bankrupt and abandoned for almost 2 years. He'd run a long way. At last he let himself stop and catch his breath. He was panting, and as he dropped to the ground by the fence he began to shiver, cold despite his ragged coat of fur. He was still wearing jockey shorts. Willie noticed after he'd rested a moment. He would have laughed, if he'd had the throat for it. He thought of the man in the pickup and wondered what he'd thought when Willie appeared in his headlights, a gaunt grey spectre in a pair of white briefs with glowing eyes as red as the pits of hell. Willie twisted himself around and caught the elastic in his jaws. He tore at them, growling low in his throat, and after a brief struggle managed to rip them away. He slung them aside and lowered himself to the damp ground, his legs resting on his paws. His mouth half open, his eyes wary, watchful, he let himself rest. He could hear distant traffic, a dog barking wildly half mile away, could smell rust and mould, the stench of diesel fumes, the cold scent of metal. Under it all was the slaughterhouse smell, faded but not gone, lingering, whispering to him of blood and death. It woke things inside him that were better left sleeping, and Willie could feel the hunger churning in his gut. He could not ignore it, not wholly. But tonight he had other concerns, fears that were more important than his hunger. Dawn was only a few hours away, and he had nowhere to go. He could not go home, not until he knew it was safe again, until he had taken steps to protect himself. Without keys and clothes and money, the agency was closed to him too. He had to go somewhere, trust someone. He thought of Blackstone, thought of Jonathan Harmon sitting by his fire, of Stephen's dead blue eyes and scarred hands, of the old tower jutting up like a rotten black stake. Jonathan might be able to protect him. Jonathan, with his strong walls and his spiked fence and all his talk of blood and iron. But once he saw Jonathan in his mind's eye, the long white hair, the gulf wolf's head cane, the veined arthritic hands twisting and grasping, then the growl rose, unbidden, in Willie's throat, and he knew Blackstone was not the answer. Joni was dead, and he did not know the others well enough, hardly knew all their names, didn't want to know them better. So in the end, like it or not, there was only Randy. Willie got to his feet, weary now, unsteady. The wind shifted, sweeping across the yards and the runs, whispering to him of blood until his nostrils quivered. Willie threw back his head and howled, a long, shuddering, lonely call that rose and fell and went out through the cold night air until the dogs began to bark for blocks around. Then, once again, he began to run. Rogoff gave her a lift home. Dawn was just starting to break when he pulled his old black Ford up to the front of her six flat. As she opened the door, he shifted into neutral and looked over at her. "I'm not going to insist right now," he said, "but it might be that I need to know the name of your client. Sleep on it. Maybe you'll decide to tell me." "Maybe I can't," Randy said. "Attorney-client privilege, remember?" Rogoff gave her a tired smile. "When you sent me to the courthouse, I had to look at your file too. You never went to law school." "No," she smiled back. "Well, I meant to. Doesn't that count for something?" She shrugged. "I'll sleep on it. We can talk tomorrow." He got out, closed the door, moved away from the car. Rogoff shifted into drive, but Randy turned back before he could pull away. "Hey, Rogoff, have you got a first name?" "Mike," he said. "See you tomorrow, Mike." He nodded and pulled away just as the street lamps began to go out. Randy walked up the step, fumbling for her key. "Randy!" She stopped, looked around. "Who's there?" "Willie." The voice was louder this time. "Down here by the garbage cans." Randy leaned over the stoop and saw him. He was crouched down low, surrounded by trash bins, shivering in the morning chill. "You're naked," she said. "Somebody tried to kill me last night. I made it out. My clothes didn't. I've been here an hour. Not that I'm complaining, mind you, but I think I have pneumonia and my balls are frozen solid. I'll never be able to have children now. Where the fuck have you been?" "There was another murder. Same M.O. Willie shook so violently that the garbage cans rattled together. "Jesus," he said. his voice gone weak. Who? Her name was Zoe Anders. Willie flinched. Fuck, 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 he said. He looked back up at Randy. She could see the fear in his eyes, but he asked anyway. What about Amy? Her sister, Randy said. He nodded. In shock, but fine. She had a nightmare. She paused a moment. So you knew Zoe too, like Sorensen? No, not like Joni. He looked at her wearily. Can we go in? She nodded and opened the door. Willie looked so grateful she thought he was about to lick her hand. The underwear was her ex-husband's, and it was too big. The pink bathrobe was Randy's, and it was too small. But the coffee was just right, and it was warm in here, and Willie felt bone-tired and nervous, but glad to be alive, especially when Randy put the plate down in front of him. She'd scrambled the eggs up with cheddar cheese and onion, and done up a rasher of bacon on the side, and it smelled like nirvana. He fell to, eagerly. I think I've figured something out, she said. She sat down across from him. Good, he said. The eggs, I mean. That is, whatever you figured out, that's good too. But, Jesus, I needed these eggs. You wouldn't believe how hungry you get. He stopped suddenly, stared down at the scrambled eggs, and reflected on what an idiot he was. But Randy hadn't noticed. Willie reached for a slice of bacon, bit off the end. Crisp, he said. Good. I'm going to tell you, Randy said, as if he hadn't spoken at all. I've got to tell somebody, and you've known me long enough, so I don't think you'll have me committed. You may laugh. She scowled at him. If you laugh, you're back out in the street, minus the boxer shorts and the bathrobe. I won't laugh, Willie said. He didn't think he'd have much difficulty not laughing. He felt rather apprehensive. He stopped eating. Randy took a deep breath and looked him in the eye. She had very lovely eyes, Willie thought. I think my father was killed by a werewolf, she said seriously, without blinking. Oh, Jesus, Willie said. He didn't laugh. A very large, invisible anaconda wrapped itself around his chest and began to squeeze. I, he said. I. Nothing was coming in or out. He pushed back from the table, knocking over the chair, and ran for the bathroom. He locked himself in and turned on the shower, full blast, twisting the hot tap all the way around. The bathroom began to fill up with steam. It wasn't nearly as good as a blast from his inhaler, but it did beat suffocating. By the time the steam was really doing good, Willie was on his knees, grasping like a man trying to suck an elephant through a straw. Finally, he began to breathe again. He stayed on his knees for a long time, until the spray from the shower had soaked through his robe and his underwear, and his face was flushed and red. Then he crawled across the tiled floor, turned off the shower, and got unsteadily to his feet. The mirror above the sink was all fogged up. Willie wiped it off with a towel and peered in at himself. He'd looked like shit. Wet shit. Hot wet shit. He felt worse. He tried to dry himself off, but the steam and the shower spray had gone everywhere, and the towels were as damp as he was. He heard Randy moving around outside, opening and closing drawers. He wanted to go out and face her, but not like this. A man has to have some pride. For a moment, he just wanted to go home to bed with his Primatene on the end table, until he remembered that his bedroom had been occupied the last time he'd been there. Are you ever coming out? Randy asked. Yeah, Willie said, but it was so weak that he doubted she heard him. He straightened and adjusted the frilly pink robe. Underneath, the undershirt looked as though he'd been competing in a wet t-shirt contest. He sighed, unlocked the door, and exited. The cold air gave him goose pimples. Randy was seated at the table again. Willie went back to his place. Sorry, he said. Asthma attack. I noticed, Randy replied. Stress-related, aren't they? Sometimes. Finish your eggs, she urged. They're getting cold. Yeah, Willie said, figuring he might as well, since it would give him something to do while he figured out what to tell her. He picked up his fork. It was like the time he'd grabbed a dirty pot that had been sitting on top of his hot plate since the night before, and realized too late that he'd never turned the hot plate off. Willie shrieked, and the fork clattered to the table and bounced once, twice, three times. It landed in front of Randy. He sucked on his fingers. They were already starting to turn red. Randy looked at him very calmly and picked up the fork. She held it, stroked it with her thumb, touched its prongs thoughtfully to her lip. "I brought out the good silver while you were in the bathroom," she said. "Solid sterling. It's been in the family for generations." His fingers hurt like hell. "Oh, Jesus, you got any butter? Oleo? Lard? I don't care. Anything will." He stopped when her hand went under the table and came out again, holding a gun. From where Willie sat, it looked like a very big gun. "Pay attention, Willie. Your fingers are the least of your worries. I realize you're in pain, so I'll give you a minute or two to collect your thoughts and try to tell me why I shouldn't blow off your fucking head right here and now." She cocked the hammer with her thumb. Willie just stared at her. He looked pathetic, like a half-drowned puppy. For one terrible moment, Randy thought he was going to have another asthma attack. She felt curiously calm, not afraid or angry or even nervous. But she didn't think she had it in her to shoot a man in the back as he ran for the bathroom, even if he was a werewolf. Thankfully, Willie spared her that decision. "You don't want to shoot me," he said, with remarkable aplomb under the circumstances. "It's bad manners to shoot your friends. You'll make a hole in the bathrobe." "I never liked that bathrobe anyway. I hate pink." "If you're really so hot to kill me, you'd stand a better chance with the fork," Willie said. "So, you admit that you're a werewolf?" "A lycanthrope," Willie corrected. He sucked at his burnt fingers again and looked at her sideways. "So, sue me. It's a medical condition. I got allergies, I got asthma, I got bad luck, and I got lycanthropy. Is it my fault?" "I didn't kill your father. I never killed anyone. I ate half a pit bull once, but can you blame me?" His voice turned querulous. "If you want to shoot me, go ahead and try. Since when do you carry a gun anyway? I thought all that shit about private eyes stuffing heat was strictly television." "The phrase is packing heat, and it is. I only bring mine out for special occasions. My father was carrying it when he died." "Didn't do him much good, did it?" Willie said softly. Randy considered that for a moment. "What would happen if I pulled the trigger?" The gun was getting heavy, but her hand was steady. "I'd try to change. I don't think I'd make it, but I'd have to try. A couple of bullets in the head at this range, while I'm still human, yeah, that'd probably do the job. But you don't want to miss, and you really don't want to wound me. Once I'm changed, it's a whole different ballgame." "My father emptied his gun on the night he was killed," Randy said thoughtfully. Willie studied his hand and winced. "Ah, fuck," he said. "I'm getting a blister." Randy put the gun on the table and went to the kitchen to get him a stick of butter. He accepted it from her gratefully. She glanced toward the window as he treated his burns. "The sun's up," she said. "I thought werewolves only changed at night during the full moon." "Lycanthropes," Willie said. He flexed his fingers, sighed. "That full moon shit was all invented by some screenwriter for Universal. Go look at your literature. We change at will. Day, night, full moon, new moon, makes no difference. Sometimes I feel more like changing during the full moon, some kind of hormonal thing. But more like getting horny than going on the rag, if you know what I mean." He grabbed his coffee. It was cold by now, but that didn't stop Willie from emptying the cup. "I shouldn't be telling you all this. Fuck, Randy. I like you. You're a friend. I care about you. You should only forget this whole morning. Believe me, it's healthier." "Why?" she said bluntly. She wasn't about to forget anything. What's going to happen to me if I don't? Are you going to rip my throat out? Should I forget Joni Sorensen and Zoe Anders too? How about Roy Hellander and all those missing kids? Am I supposed to forget what happened to my father? She stopped for a moment, lowered her voice. You came to me for help, Willie, and pardon, but you sure as hell look as though you still need it. Willie looked at her across the table with a morose hangdog expression on his face. I don't know whether I want to kiss you or slap you, he finally admitted. Shit, you're right. You know too much already. He stood up. I got to get into my own clothes. This wet underwear is giving me pneumonia. Call a cab. We'll go check out my place. Talk. You got a coat? Take the Burberry, Randy said. It's in the closet. The coat was even bigger on him than it had been on Randy, but it beat the pink bathrobe. He looked almost human as he emerged from the closet, fussing with the belt. Randy was rummaging in the silver drawer. She found a large carving knife, the one her grandfather used to use on Thanksgiving, and slid it through the belt of her jeans. Willie looked at her nervously. Good idea, he finally said, but take the gun too. The cab driver was the quiet type. The drive cross town passed in awkward silence. Randy paid him while Willie climbed out to check the doors. It was a blustery, overcast day, and the river looked grey and choppy as it slapped against the pier. Willie kicked his front door in a fit of pique and vanished down the alley. Randy waited by the pier and watched the cab drive off. A few minutes later, Willie was back, looking disgusted. This is ridiculous, he said. The back door hasn't been opened in years. You'd need a hammer and chisel just to knock through the rust. The loading docks are bolted down and chained with the mother of all padlocks on the chains. And the front door, there's a spare set of keys in my car, but even if we got those, the police bar can only be lifted from the inside. So how the hell did it get in, I ask you? Randy looked at the brewery's weathered brick walls appraisingly. They looked pretty solid to her, and the second floor windows were a good 20 feet off street level. She walked around the side to take a look down the alley. There's a window broken, she said. That was me getting out, Willie said, not my nocturnal caller getting in. Randy had already figured out that much from the broken glass all over the cobblestones. Right now, I'm more concerned about how we're going to get in, she pointed. If we move that dumpster a few feet to the left and climb on top, and you climb on my shoulders, I think you might be able to hoist yourself in. Willie considered that. What if it's still in there? What? Randy said. Whatever was after me last night. If I hadn't jumped through that window, it'd be me without a skin this morning, and believe me, I'm cold enough as it is. He looked at the window, at the dumpster, and back at the window. Fuck, he said. We can't stand here all day. But I've got a better idea. Help me roll the dumpster away from the wall a little. Randy didn't understand, but she did as Willie suggested. They left the dumpster in the center of the alley, directly opposite the broken window. Willie nodded and began unbelting the coat she'd lent him. Turn around, he told her. I don't want you freaking out. I've got to be naked, and your carnal appetites might get the best of you. Randy turned around. The temptation to glance over her shoulder was irresistible. She heard the coat fall to the ground. Then she heard something else. Soft, padding steps, like a dog. She turned. He'd circled all the way down to the end of the alley. Her ex-husband's old underwear lay puddled against the cobblestones atop the Burberry coat. Willie came streaking back toward the brewery, building speed. He was, Randy noticed, not a very prepossessing wolf. His fur was a dirty grey-brown colour, kind of mangy. His rear looked too large and his legs too thin, and there was something ungainly about the way he ran. He put on a final burst of speed, leapt on top of the dumpster, bounded off the metal lid, and flew through the shattered window, breaking more glass as he went. Randy heard a loud thump from inside the bedroom. She went round to the front. A few moments later, the locks began to unlock, one by one. and Willie opened the heavy steel door. He was wearing his own bathrobe, a red tartan flannel, and his hand was full of keys. "Come on," he said. "No sign of night visitors. I put on some water for tea." "The fucker must have crawled out of the toilet," Willie said. "I don't see any other way he could have gotten in." Randy stood in front of what remained of his bedroom door. She studied the shattered wood, ran her finger lightly across one long, jagged splinter, then knelt to look at the door. "Whatever it was strong. Look at these gouges in the wood. Look at how sharp and clean they are. You don't do that with a fist. Claws, maybe. More like some kind of knife. And take a look at this." She gestured towards the doorknob, which lay on the floor amidst a bunch of kindling. Willie bent to pick it up. "Don't touch," she said, grabbing his arm. "Just look." He got down on one knee. At first he didn't notice anything, but when he leaned close, he saw how the brass was scored and scraped. "Something sharp," Randy said, "and hard." She stood up. "When you first heard sounds, what direction were they coming from?" Willie thought a moment. "It was hard to tell," he said. "Toward the back, I think." Randy walked back. All along the hall, the doors were closed. She studied the banister at the top of the stairs, then moved on and began opening and closing doors. "Come here," she said, at the fourth door. Willie trotted down the hall. Randy had the door ajar. The knob on the hall side was fine. The knob on the inside displayed the same kind of scoring they'd seen on his bedroom door. Willie was aghast. "But this is the men's room," he said. "You mean it did come out of the toilet? I'll never shit again." "It came out of this room," Randy said. "I don't know about the toilet." She went in and looked around. There wasn't much to look at. Two toilet stalls, two urinals, two sinks with a long mirror above them, and antique brass soap dispensers beside the water taps. A paper towel dispenser, Willie's towels and toiletries. No window, not even a small frosted glass window. No window at all. Down the hall, the tea kettle began to whistle. Randy looked thoughtfully as they walked back to the living room. "Joan Sorensen died behind a locked door, and the killer got to Zoe Anders without waking her sister, right across the hall." "The fucking thing can come and go as it pleases," Willie said. The idea gave him the creeps. He glanced around nervously as he got out the tea bags. But there was nobody there but him and Randy. "Except it can't," Randy said. With Sorensen and Anders, there was no damage, no sign of a break-in, nothing but a corpse. But with you, the killer was stopped by something as simple as a locked door. "Not stopped," Willie said, "just slowed down a little." He repressed a shudder and brought the tea over to his coffee table. "Did he get the right Anders sister?" she asked. Willie stood there stupidly for a moment, holding the kettle poised over the cups. "What do you mean?" "You've got identical twins sharing the same house. Let's presume it's a house the killer's never visited before. Somehow he gains entry, and he chains, murders, and flays only one of them, without even waking the other." Randy smiled up at him sweetly. "You can't tell them apart by sight. He probably didn't know which room was which, so the question is, did he get the werewolf?" It was nice to know that she wasn't infallible. "Yes," he said, "and no. They were twins, Randy, both lycanthropes." She looked honestly surprised. "How did you know?" he asked her. "Oh, the chains," she said negligently. Her mind was far away, gnawing at the puzzle. "Silver chains. She was burned wherever they touched her flesh, and Joan Sorensen was a werewolf too, of course. She was crippled, yes, but only as a human, not after her transformation. That's why her legs were chained, to hold her if she changed." She looked at Willie with a baffled expression on her face. "It doesn't make sense to kill one and leave the other untouched. Are you sure that Amy Anders is a werewolf too?" A lycanthrope, he said. Yes, definitely. They were even harder to tell apart as wolves. At least when they were human, they dressed differently. Amy liked white lace, frills, that kind of stuff, and Zoe was into leather. There was a cut glass ashtray in the centre of the coffee table filled with Willie's private party mix, aspirin, Alarist and Tums. He took a handful of pills and swallowed them dry. Look, before we go on with this, I want one card on the table, Randy said. For once he was ahead of her. If I knew who killed your father, I'd tell you, but I don't. I was in the service, overseas. I vaguely remember something in the courier, but to tell the truth, I'd forgotten all about it until you threw it at me last night. What can I tell you? He shrugged. Don't bullshit me, Willie. My father was killed by a werewolf. You're a werewolf. You must know something. Hey, try substituting Jew or diabetic or bald man for werewolf in that statement and see how much sense it makes. I'm not saying you're wrong about your father, because you're not. It fits. It all fits. Everything from the condition of the body to the empty gun. But even if you buy that much, then you've got to ask, which werewolf? How many of you are there? Randy asked incredulously. Damned if I know, Willie said. What do you think? We get together for a lodge meeting every time the moon is full. The purebloods? Hell, not many. The pack's been getting pretty thin these last few generations. But there's lots of mongrels like me. Half-breeds, quarter-breeds, what have you. The old families had their share of bastards. Some can work the change, some can't. I've heard of a few who change one day and never do manage to change back. And that's just from the old bloodlines, never mind the ones like Joni. You mean Joni was different? Willie gave her a reluctant nod. You've seen the movies. You get bitten by a werewolf, you turn into a werewolf. That is assuming there's enough of you left to turn into anything except a cadaver. She nodded and went on. Well, that part's true, or partly true. It doesn't happen as often as it once did. Guy gets bit nowadays, he runs to a doctor, gets the wound cleaned and treated with antiseptic. Gets his rabies shots and his tetanus shots and his penicillin and fuck all knows what else, and he's fine. The wonders of modern medicine. Willie hesitated, briefly, looking into her eyes, those lovely eyes, wondering if she'd understand. And finally he plunged ahead. Joni was such a good kid. It broke my heart to see her in that chair. One night she told me that the hardest thing of all was realizing that she'd never know what it felt like to make love. She'd been a virgin when they hit that truck. We'd had a few drinks, she was crying, and, well, I couldn't take it. I told her what I was and what I could do for her. She didn't believe a word of it, so I had to show her. I bit her leg. She couldn't feel a damn thing down there anyway. I bit her, and I held the bite for a long time, worried it around, good. Afterwards, I nursed her myself. No doctors, no antiseptic, no rabies vaccine. We're talking major league infection here. There was a day or two when the fever was running so high I thought maybe I'd killed her. Her leg had turned nearly black. You could see the stuff going up her veins. I got to admit it was pretty gross. I'm in no hurry to try it again, but it worked. The fever broke, and Joni changed. You weren't just friends, Randy said with certainty. You were lovers. Yeah, he said. As wolves. I guess I look sexier in fur. I couldn't even begin to keep up with her, though. Joni was a pretty active wolf. We're talking almost every night here. As a human, she was still crippled, Randy said. Willie nodded, held up his hand. See? The burns were still there, and a blood blister had formed on his index finger. Once or twice the change has saved my life, when my asthma got so bad I thought I was going to suffocate. That kind of thing doesn't cross over. But it's sure as hell waiting for you when you cross back. Sometimes you even get nasty surprises. Catch a bullet as a wolf, and it's nothing. A sting and a slap heals up right away. But you can pay for it when you change into human form, especially if you change too soon and the damn thing gets infected. and silver will burn the shit out of you, no matter what form you're in. LBJ was my favourite president. Just loved them Cupro nickel sandwich quarters. Randy stood up. This is all a little overwhelming. Do you like being a werewolf?
A lycanthrope, Willie shrugged.
I don't know. Do you like being a woman? It's what I am. Randy crossed the room and stared out his window at the river. I'm very confused, she said. I look at you and you're my friend, Willie. I've known you for years. Only you're a werewolf too. I've been telling myself that werewolves don't exist since I was 12. And now I find out the city is full of them. Only someone or something is killing them, flaying them. Should I care? Why should I care? She ran a hand through her tangled hair. We both know that Roy Hellander didn't kill those kids. My father knew it too. He kept pressing, and one night he was lured to the stockyards and some kind of animal tore out his throat. Every time I think of that, I think maybe I ought to find this werewolf killer and sign up to help him. Then I look at you again. She turned and looked at him. And damn it, you're still my friend. She looked as though she was going to cry. Willie had never seen her cry, and he didn't want to. He hated it when they cried. Remember when I first offered you a job and you wouldn't take it because you thought all collection agents were pricks? She nodded. Lycanthropes are skin changers. We turn into wolves. Yeah, we're carnivores. You got it. You don't meet many vegetarians in the pack, but there's meat and there's meat. You won't find nearly as many rats around here as you will in other cities this size. What I'm saying is the skin may change, but what you do is still up to the person inside. So stop thinking about werewolves and werewolf killers and start thinking about murderers, because that's what we're talking about. Randy crossed the room and sat back down. I hate to admit it, but you're making sense. I'm good in bed, too, Willie said with a grin. The ghost of a smile crossed her face. Fuck you. Exactly my suggestion. What kind of underwear are you wearing? Never mind my underwear, she said. Do you have any ideas about these murderers, past or present? Sometimes Randy had a one-track mind, Willie thought. Unfortunately, it never seemed to be on the track that led under the sheets. Jonathan told me about an old legend, he said. Jonathan? She said. Jonathan Harmon. Yeah, that one. Old Blood and Iron, the Courier, Blackstone, the Pack, the Founding Family. All of it. Wait a minute. He's a... We're a lycanthrope? Willie nodded. Yeah, leader of the Pack. He... Randy leapt ahead of him. And it's hereditary? He saw where she was going. Yes, but... Steve Harmon is mentally disturbed, Randy interrupted. His family keeps it out of the papers, but they can't stop the whispering. Violent episodes, strange doctors coming and going at Blackstone, shock treatments. He's some kind of pain freak, isn't he? Willie sighed. Yeah. Ever see his hands? The palms and fingers are covered with silver burns. Once I saw him close his hand around a silver cartwheel and hold it there until smoke started to come out between his fingers. It burned a big round hole right in the centre of his palm. He shuddered. Yeah, Stephen's a freak all right, and he's strong enough to rip your arm out of your socket and beat you to death with it. But he didn't kill your father. He couldn't have. Says you, she said. He didn't kill Joni or Zoe either. They weren't just murdered, Randy. They were skinned. That's where the legend comes in. The word is skin changers. Remember? What if the power was in the skin? So you catch a werewolf, flay it, slip into the bloody skin, and change. Randy was staring at him with a sick look on her face. Does it really work that way? Someone thinks so. Who? Someone who's been thinking about werewolves for a long time. Someone who's gone way past obsession into a fully-fledged psychopathy. Someone who thinks he saw a werewolf once. Who thinks werewolves done him wrong. Who hates them. Wants to hurt them. Wants revenge. But maybe also, deep down, someone who wants to know what it's like.
Roy Hellander, she said.
Maybe if we could find this damn secret hideout in the woods, we'd know for sure.
Randy stood up. I racked my brains for hours. We could poke around a few of the city parks some, but I'm not sanguine on our prospects. No, I want to know more about these legends, and I want to look at Stephen with my own eyes. Get your car, Willie. We're going to pay a visit to Blackstone.
He'd been afraid she was going to say something like that. He reached out and grabbed another handful of his party mix.
Oh, Jesus, he said, crunching down on a mouthful of pills. This isn't the Adams family, you know. Jonathan is for real.
So am I, said Randy. And Willie knew the cause was lost.
It was raining again by the time they reached Courier Square. Willie waited in the car while Randy went inside the gunsmith's. 20 minutes later, when she came back out, she found him snoring behind the wheel. At least he'd had the sense to lock the doors of his mammoth old Cadillac. She tapped on the glass and he sat right up and stared at her for a moment without recognition. Then he woke up, leaned over, and unlocked the door on the passenger's side. Randy slid beside him.
How'd it go?
They don't get much call for silver bullets, but they know someone upstate who does custom work for collectors, Randy said in a disgusted tone of voice.
You don't sound too happy about it.
I'm not. You wouldn't believe what they're going to charge me for a box of silver bullets.
Never mind that it's going to take 2 weeks. It was going to take a month, but I raised the ante.
She looked glumly out the rain-streaked window. A torrent of grey water rushed down the gutter, carrying its flotilla of cigarette butts and scraps of yesterday's newspaper.
2 weeks?
Willie turned the ignition and put the barge in gear. Hell, we'll probably be dead in 2 weeks. Just as well. The whole idea of silver bullets makes me nervous.
They crossed the square, past the castle marquee and the courier building, and headed up central, the windshield wipers clicking back and forth rhythmically.
Willie hung a left on the 13th and headed toward the bluff, while Randy took out her father's revolver, opened the cylinder, and checked to see that it was fully loaded.
Willie watched her out of the corner of his eye as he drove.
Waste of time, he said.
Guns don't kill werewolves. Werewolves kill werewolves.
Lycanthropes, Randy reminded him. He grinned and for a moment looked almost like the man she'd shared an office with a long time ago. Both of them grew visibly more intense as they drove down 13th, the caddy's big wheels splashing through the puddles. They were still a block away when she saw the little car crawling down the bluff, white against the dark stone. A moment later, she saw the lights flashing red and blue.
Willie saw them too.
He slammed on the brakes, lost traction, and had to steer wildly to avoid slamming into a parked car as he fishtailed. His forehead was beading with sweat when he finally brought the car to a stop, and Randy didn't think it was from the near collision.
Oh, Jesus, he said. Oh, Jesus, not Harmon too. I don't believe it.
He began to wheeze and fumbled in his pocket for an inhaler.
Wait here, I'll check it out, Randy told him.
She got out, turned up the collar of her coat, and walked the rest of the way to where the 13th dead-ended flush against the cliff. The coroner's wagon was parked amidst three police cruisers. Randy arrived at the same time as the cable car. Rogoff was the first one out. Behind him she saw Cooney, the police photographer, and two uniforms carrying a body bag. It must have gotten pretty crowded on the way down.
You!
Rogoff seemed surprised to see her. Strands of black hair were plastered to his forehead by the rain.
Me, Randy agreed.
The plastic of the body bag was slick and wet, and the uniforms were having trouble with it. One of them lost his footing as he stepped down, and Randy thought she saw something shift inside the bag.
It doesn't fit the pattern, she said to Rogoff.
The other killings have all been at night.
Rogoff took her by the arm and drew her away, gently but firmly.
You don't want to look at this one, Randy.
There was something in his tone that made her look at him hard.
Why not? Can't be any worse than Zoe Anders, can it? Who's in the bag?
Father or the son?
Neither one, he said. He glanced back behind them, up toward the top of the bluff, and Randy found herself following his gaze. Nothing was visible of Blackstone but the high wrought iron fence that surrounded the estate. This time his luck ran out on him. The dogs got to him first. Cooney says the scent of blood off of what he was wearing. Well, it must have driven them wild. They tore him to pieces, Randy. He put his hand on her shoulder, as if to comfort her. No, Randy said. She felt numb, dazed. Yes, he insisted. It's over. And believe me, it's not something you want to see. She backed away from him. They were loading the body in the rear of the coroner's wagon, while Sylvia Cooney supervised the operation, smoking a cigar in the rain. Rogoff tried to touch her again, but she whirled away from him and ran to the wagon. Hey, Cooney said. The body was on the tailgate, half in and half out of the wagon. Randy reached for the zipper on the body bag. One of the cops grabbed her arm. She shoved him aside and unzipped the bag. His face was half gone. His right cheek and ear and part of his jaw had been torn away, devoured right down the bone. What features he had left were obscured by blood. Someone tried to pull her away from the tailgate. She spun and kicked him in the balls, then turned back to the body and grabbed it under the arms and pulled. The inside of the body bag was slick with blood. The corpse slid loose of the plastic sheath like a banana squirting out of its skin and fell into the street. Rain washed down over it, and the runoff in the gutter turned pink, then red. A hand, or part of a hand, fell out of the bag almost like an afterthought. Most of the arm was gone, and Randy could see bones peeking through, and places where huge hunks of flesh had been torn right out of his thigh, shoulder, and torso. He was naked, but between his legs was nothing but a raw red wound where his genitalia had been. Something was fastened around his neck and knotted beneath his chin. Randy leaned forward to touch it and drew back when she saw his face. The rain had washed it clean. He had one eye left, a green eye, open and staring. The rain pooled in the socket and ran down his cheek. Roy had grown gaunt to the point of emaciation, with a week's growth of beard, but his long hair was still the same colour, the colour he had shared with all his brothers and sisters, that muddy Hellander blonde. Something was knotted under his chin, a long twisted cloak of some kind. It had gotten all tangled when he fell. Randy was trying to straighten it when they caught her by both arms and dragged her away bodily. No, she said wildly. What was he wearing? What was he wearing, damn you? I have to see. No one answered. Rogoff had her right arm prisoned in a grip that felt like steel. She fought him wildly, kicking and shouting, but he held her until the hysteria had passed, and then held her some more as she leaned against his chest, sobbing. She didn't quite know when Willie had come up, but suddenly there he was. He took her away from Rogoff and led her back to his Cadillac, and they sat inside, silent, as the first of the coroner's wagon and then the police cruisers drove off, one by one. She was covered with blood. Willie gave her some aspirin from a bottle he kept in his glove compartment. She tried to swallow it, but her throat was raw, and she wound up gagging it back up. It's all right, he told her, over and over. It wasn't your father, Randy. Listen to me, please. It wasn't your father. It was Roy Hellander, Randy said to him at last. And he was wearing Joni's skin. Willie drove her home. She was in no shape to confront Jonathan Harmon or anybody. She'd calmed down, but the hysteria was still there, just under the surface. He could see it in the eyes, hear it in her voice. If that wasn't enough, she kept telling him the same thing, over and over. It was Roy Hellander, she'd say. Like he didn't know, and he was wearing Joni's skin. Willie found keys and helped her upstairs to her apartment. Inside, he made her take a couple of sleeping pills from the all-purpose pharmaceutical in his glove box, then turned down the bed and undressed her. He figured if anything would snap her back to herself, it would be his fingers on the buttons of her blouse. But she just smiled at him, vacant and dreamy, and told him that it was Roy Hellander and he was wearing Joni's skin. The big silver knife jammed through her belt loops gave him pause. He finally unzipped her fly, undid her buckle, and yanked off the jeans, knife and all. She didn't wear panties. He'd always suspected as much. When Randy was finally in bed asleep, Willie went back to her bathroom and threw up. Afterward, he made himself a gin and tonic to wash the taste of vomit out of his mouth, and went and sat alone in her living room in one of her red velvet chairs. He'd had even less sleep than Randy these past few nights, and he felt as though he might drift off at any moment, but he knew somehow that it was important not to. It was Roy Hellander, and he was wearing Joni's skin. So it was over. He was safe.
He remembered the way his door shook last night. A solid wood door, and it split so much like cheap panelling. Behind it was something dark and powerful, something that left scars on brass doorknobs and showed up in places it had no right to be. Willie didn't know what had been on the other side of his door, but somehow he didn't think that the gaunt, wasted, half-eaten travesty of a man he'd seen on 13th Street quite fit the bill. He believed that his nocturnal visitor had been Roy Hellander, with or without Joni's skin. About the same time, he'd believed that the man had been eaten by dogs. Dogs. How long did Jonathan expect to get away with that shit? Still, he couldn't blame him, not with Zoe and Joni dead, and Hellander trying to sneak into Blackstone dressed in a human skin. There are things that hunt the hunters. Willie picked up the phone and...